Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Pause, Purpose, Possibility. I'm joined this evening, as has sometimes been the case in the past, with my milkweed colleagues, Kelsey and Colleen and Kelly, and they can say more about themselves as they jump in as they wish. Some of you who have been with us before will recognize them as, again, people who have joined with me in a few of these conversations along the way. They are what the team that helps to bring this podcast to life each week. So I'm immensely grateful for them in that way, and also for the wondrous friends that they are and powerful presence that they are in my life and in the world. And tonight we are returning to pick up the thread of a conversation we started several weeks ago around that first word in the title of the podcast, pause. It's P-A-U-S-E, not P-A-W-S, just in case there's anybody out there who wants to lob that wondering. Pause. And last time we talked about things like why it's important and why it matters in our own lives and in the world. And we can maybe continue with some of that, but we have some other directions that are unrehearsed, unscripted, and we'll just see where this conversation goes this time. I had indicated to the team that I thought that a place to begin this time would be by inviting stories of pause, to put some flesh on the bones, so to speak, or to bring it into our hearts and minds in very human, real, lived experience kinds of ways. The question we're going to begin with for all of us to consider is, and you listening as well, who comes to your mind and heart for you as an exemplar or model of pause? What is it about their example that strikes you and why? So that's the question I want to start with, and to give you a bit of a time to think your way into that, feel your way into that, I can just very quickly offer two that come to mind, and maybe some more will emerge as I hear myself thinking aloud. One was a number of years ago, so this is more in the professional realm, how pause showed up in a really powerful way for me. So I used to be a college faculty member and a program administrator, and so had a life in higher education and a career in higher education. And a number of years ago, I was at an annual international professional conference with lots of people taking themselves way too seriously and being very driven professionally and very high-paced and high-pressure and lots of posturing and lots of words being thrown around in an attempt to impress one another and score points and look smart and so on and so on. And there was this one session. I don't remember the topic or who was in the room, but at the very beginning, as the session was getting started, it was a panel up in front of the conference hotel room, kind of a generic space, a panel of three or four presenters. And one of them began the whole session by saying, all right, this session, I think it was booked for 90 minutes. This session is going to unfold in ways that will be very different from how these things typically go in professional academic conference kinds of settings. Namely, I've got a timer up here on the table in front of me set to go off every 20 minutes. So at every 20 minutes throughout the next 90, so roughly four times across the session, when that timer goes off, I will ring a chime inviting everything in the room to stop for 1 minute, and then I'll ring the chime and we can pick up wherever we left off. And so that's what we did. And no matter what was happening at that 20 minute, 40, 60, and 80 minute mark, no matter what was happening, no matter who was speaking, if they were in the middle of a sentence, if someone was in the middle of a table pounding tirade, trying to prove their point and obliterate the opposition, no matter what was happening, when the chime rang, everything stopped. For a period of time. And it was just so incredible to palpably feel in your body how different the energy was each time after the pause. So in the case of someone who is maybe red-faced, table-pounding, angry, tirade, making a loud point, after that minute of silence and pause, they sort of took a breath and either began again, but in a much more measured, easy to absorb, easy to follow kind of way, or they just decided, whatever I was so irate about before really wasn't worth it after all. So I'm just going to stop right here and turn the microphone over to somebody else. It was just, again, incredible how each time everything about the energy in the room completely changed. And I have wondered sometimes desperately, many, many, many times over the years since then, what would happen in the course of just our normal lives or work meetings or Palestine and Israel and Hamas, not to be flippant about it, but what if somehow we culturally, societally, organizationally, in our families, in our communities, in the lives we share together, could build in some variation of that kind of just stop and take a breath, even in the middle of the most, or maybe especially in the middle of the most frothy, charged unfoldings of events or encounters. So that's one that just occurs to me as a model that I have been really struck by, or my, and the second that I'm briefly going to tell is about my dad. Some of you have heard me tell other stories about dad, about my mom as well along the way. But in this case, I'm imagining or remembering, rather, I'm remembering just very simple little moments. He was a dairy farmer, so got up at 4 every morning and worked constantly until very late every night. He'd stop for meals and so on, but otherwise was working all the time. And was and did so in a way that also simultaneously embodied presence and depth and attention and care, and sometimes did take the very actively intentional shape of pause, of stopping, of taking a break. Two very quickly that are still really rich memories for me. When I was growing up, especially in cold weather, Dad would stop the milking in the morning when it was time for us to make our way out to the school bus. We had to be out to the end of the quarter mile long driveway out in the country at the end of our farm by like 7:10 every morning to catch the bus for the half hour, 40 minute drive into school in town. And no matter, again, no matter how busy or frantic or relentless the morning milking was, when it was cold enough that it wouldn't work for us to just walk out and stand there in the cold, Dad would stop. He would pause the milking. He'd tell the cows they had to wait, and he'd get in the car or the pickup, and he would drive us out to the end of the driveway and would wait with us for the bus. And we'd listen to the radio, or we'd just sit quietly, or he'd ask about what date, what we had coming up that day. It was just this lovely, simple act of love, a pause as an act of love and care, no matter how busy or pressured he was, that I just so treasured and continue to all these decades later. The other very quick impression or memory I have of him is, again, no matter how busy he was or the need to keep going, how relentless that was, In again in cold weather, middle of the day, after lunch, he would allow himself to go into the middle room in our house, in the farmhouse growing up, was the dining room. And in that room, over against one wall, was a big fuel oil burning stove that was the heat source for the entire house. Had a little isinglass window in the front where you could open and toss in the match to poof, start the thing. And then down at the bottom near the floor was a vent, a grate for the heated air to be blown out into the room and into the house by a fan. And so, Dad, I loved how he would allow himself, no matter how much work there had to be done, after lunch, he would go in and stretch out on the floor. He'd just lay down on his back with his feet right up against that blower on the furnace to try to get some feeling back into his otherwise frozen, numb toes from being out on working in the farm for hours at a time at, sometimes 30 below as it gets here in Minnesota. And he would allow himself that 5 minute power nap pause. He would close his eyes. For all intents and purposes, all indications were that he was deep asleep for 5 minutes. And then, boing, he would almost, as though he was attached to strings or ropes from pulling overhead, he just, boing, he would levitate up back onto his feet and bound back out and wrap himself up in however many layers of farm coats and boots and so on and so on, and he'd plow back out into the cold for hours and hours and hours and yet to go. But I just, again, I was so struck and moved that he could do that he could power nap the way he did, 5 minutes, as a way. The way I am thinking of it now is that that was an act of self-care. He knew he needed to do that in order to be able to keep going, to be able to give the animals the attention that they and care that they deserved, and so that he wouldn't lose toes to the cold. It was practical, it was wise, it was beautiful to watch. Sometimes I would very quietly kind of crawl up next to him and lay down perpendicular to him on the floor so that my head was resting on his belly. And I would feel the sensation of his breathing, lifting my head just a little bit with each inhale and dropping with each exhale. There was something so warm, and oh, I'm going to tear myself up. He indirectly was gifting me my own experience of pause and sustenance and connection and mutual care and awe at being in each other's presence in front of the furnace, trying to keep warm, and that one of the sources of warmth that we generated for each other was just that pause that we could take together. Okay, so thank you for bearing with all that. That's the kind of thing I'm inviting now my friends Kelly and Colleen and Kelsey to help us also get going with this pause part two conversation. And yeah, what kinds of stories come to mind of and heart of people in your own life, in your own experience, who in whom you experienced or witnessed pause, or maybe the lack of pause, the reluctance to pause? Who comes to mind and heart as models or exemplars of something you'd like to say about pause, what it looks like, why it matters?
This is Kelsey. I think first about teachers of pause. For me, these teachers emphasize pause as solitude specifically. And I do consider myself an advocate for for pause, for solitude specifically. So the two people that come to mind are this woman, Catherine Dottery, who wrote a book called Pustinia, which means desert. So taking an intentional pause, a desert time to be with oneself and one's sense of higher power. Also, I work at a retreat center presently that was founded by a woman named Ruth Halverson. And she created this retreat center specifically so that people could have pause, rest, renewal. And so those two women have had specific impact on me. However, I think the in equal portion, perhaps more so, the most influential pause model in my life is actually a creature. And it is my Maine Coon cat, Henry. Probably once a day, my spouse points to our sleeping, dozing, fat cat and says, "That's our role model." And he truly is. I wish I could be as mellow, and it's almost like he's stuck in pause. And again, Pause, though he also has Paws. Henry, every time I glance at him, I'm reminded to pause. And I love this persistent reminder. I think our culture is so obsessed with productivity, and that so easily entrenches into our identities and really vitality comes from pause, from laying down in front of the heater for your 5 minute nap or whatever it may be. So I honestly, I know there are other people in my life who embody it, but I honestly can only think of Henry right now.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Kelsey. Colleen, Kelly, anyone you'd like to weave in here?
Yeah, this is Kelly. I have a few notes I want to share, but the first one is actually one that's surprising me that I'm going to say from what Kelsey triggered, something that Kelsey said triggered this. I feel like there's an importance of having role models, mentors, leaders in our lives that help create the space for pause, that it's okay to pause. And there's someone on my work team who, in her role, is not a manager or a director or anything. She is a peer on my team. And yet she mentors all of us in being well, in the most beautiful of ways. At the end of meetings, she'll say, "All right, everyone, you know what I'm going to say. Take a breath, take a drink. Stretch, take care of yourself. Take care of yourself." And she reminds us at every meeting that we all have as a team together consistently, which is honestly, I'm just putting this together how amazing that really is, because that takes a lot of, well, courage, I would say, but also the consistency of saying that every meeting to us. That can be kind of a burden, maybe, but yet she offers that to us. And I think we need it. I do. I think we need it. We move from meeting to meeting and you forget. And she helps hold that space for us. So, wow, Julie, I'm talking about you. Thank you. Okay, the other two things I want to mention as things people who emulate pause, I'm going to go with children. And specifically, I have a little over 1 year old son, And just, I think anyone can probably say this if you've been around young kids, the noticings that they have for things that you'd never notice around your house. I was walking him to my parents' house the other day, which is his daycare part of the week. And immediately upon stepping outside, he points up into the air at seagulls that are flying over us. And I looked up really briefly because he didn't say anything. He just pointed. And I looked up very briefly and very quickly looked back down. And all of a sudden, I realized I had to jerk my head back up to be like, what was that? Oh, he was actually pointing at something that I would have never noticed up there. Oh, yeah, there are seagulls in the sky. How cool. It was just on a normal morning, you're just doing your routine, right? Getting from point A to point B so that you can get to the next point C. And there he is, saying, look up, notice, pause. I appreciate that a lot. And he does that in a lot of beautiful ways for us in almost I don't know if forced pause is the right word, but sometimes it can be forced with kids. They force you to stop what you're doing and notice. So thank you, Theo. And then the last one is music. I'm going to go with a thing, not a person. I love singing. I don't do as nearly as much of it as I wish I did. I love singing in a group in particular, in a choir, smaller group. And I love that I can be fully immersed in the music. And that is a pause for me, that's all I'm focusing on, and the feeling of that connection, creating something beautiful with these people around you is a beautiful pause for me. And I also love listening to it too. I appreciate all kinds of music and also helps me get lost in the song, get lost in the music, and that's a pause for me. So thank you, music.
This is Colleen. The biggest thing that's coming to my mind is also it's not a person. I find that nature really has taught me the importance of pause, and it feels very counterculture to the American pace of life. I can get very caught up in the busyness. Yeah, just the busyness of life. And yeah, once you're wrapped up into it, you can be pretty consumed by it. But I find, yeah, even if I take a 5 minute walk, and I notice I listen to the birds, or yeah, it doesn't need to be a long time outside, or yeah, even going on a walk and noticing flowers, or noticing that the trees are budding. I also really like or appreciate when there's a snowstorm or it's pouring rain and it's hard to do something outside, and it can just force you to stay put, or to, I guess it, yeah, just forces you to slow down because, yeah, you maybe it has changed what you're able to do that day. So yeah, I don't know. I think that nature has really been a, and just thinking of seasons, at least in Minnesota, having summer, fall, winter, and spring. That, yeah, that is something that's been helpful over the years, just the importance of pause and how we do all need to rest. And but yeah, I think it can be easier said than done. I think it's always something I feel like I'm working on.
Thanks, everybody. I love those stories and reminders of the many forms and shapes and opportunities that we are given through our companions on the planet, like Henry and the birds and so on. And I'm going to push an edge here if I can a little bit, friends, and just point out that Well, yes, we live on a planet that is beautiful and that is worthy of our having our attention called to it by Theo pointing to the sky or by Henry just being his lovely Maine Coon self. And we also live on a planet and in a time of incredible brokenness and pain and urgency, and there's stuff to do. There are desperate, endless needs out there that yearn for us to get busy, to be busy, to respond, to make a difference, to try to help, to try to heal. I encountered, many of you maybe have as well, in the last year or two, there is a book titled 4,000 Weeks, the title of which points to the reality that the average human lifespan is 4,000 weeks long. That's all we have. So the question, of course, implied is, what are we going to do with the 4,000 weeks we have in a typical average human lifespan? And I know it's kind of conventionally American culture to say things like, you can sleep when you're dead, and so on and so on. And that title, 4,000 weeks, I'm using as a wedge here into the conversation to just push us a little bit around. So yeah, in the short amount of time that we have, 4,000 weeks, with all the need and urgency and brokenness and pain that there is for us to respond to, what is it about pause that doesn't simply mean that it's nothing more than a luxury available only to the elite, to those who can afford it? Is it ever not a good thing to pause? Isn't it important sometimes to just keep going? Help me tackle some of those kinds of wonderings or even objections to this notion of pause. Is it dangerous for there to be a podcast titled Pause, Purpose, Possibility? That's just so much navel gazing, isn't it? That we don't have time for. So, yeah, help me out. Push back now against my pushing back. Yeah, what do you make of those kinds of questions? What would Henry think of that? Or Theo?
Well, yeah, this is Kelsey again. And I'm finding it inflammatory, if I'm honest. It is more available to us to get caught up in and believe in, that I don't have time to pause. That there are too many consequences if should I pause. And we now have science and data and our, besides which, our own souls to tell us that the consequences are actually greater if we do not pause. Autoimmune disorders, chronic illness, fatigue, inability to be with each other, to be present, as this podcast is so about. Clearly I'm biased. However, I also, like, I understand. I grew up in something akin to poverty, though not poverty. And I think by numerical standards, poverty, but it was a rich life. And I understand that for someone who's simply trying to make it, that pause is a luxury, or it can feel that way, or in the midst of societal breakdown, which we experienced relatively recently in our stratosphere here where we live, with the murder of George Floyd. In the midst of societal breakdown, the pause is seemingly irrelevant. And if we don't sit by the fire and take our 5-minute nap to recharge, we don't have what it takes to keep going. So I'm pretty biased that it's vital, it's essential, and it not only is it essential in terms of like preventative care, it's essential for right now, and it's essential to keep going, and it's essential for a quality of life, really. I really do think pause, like Theo pointing out the birds, like pause invites us to the life that is right before us. And without sounding too judgmental, I think I or we may be foolish to not pause. To miss the invitation.
Thank you for that, Kelsey. Among other things, thank you for ending there with the word invitation. That provides yet another opening for me to say, as I have in the past and will continue as opportunity presents itself, that the word vocation is related to the Latin vocare, which means to call or to invite. So it seems to me that you opened the door there, Kelsey, for us to remember that we are invited, called, summoned to lives of abundance and thriving and flourishing and effectiveness and compassion and impact and so on. And that as such, a key ingredient to that calling, the invitation, is as exactly as you put it, an invitation to pause, as well as to do the work that needs doing. And that we can't do the latter without pause. We can't have an exhale without doing the inhale, and vice versa, and the pause in between each of those. Our hearts can't beat without the infinitesimal pause between thumps of the heart. What else needs or wants to be said or wondered about in the next few minutes here before we wind down another episode?
1,000% agree with what you said, Kelsey. And I wonder how people balance some of what you were just saying, Chris, of how do we know when it's time to keep walking or to pause? Because there are potentially moments where we don't really know what to do next, or where, you know, what will become next, and yet we still get up in the morning and exist. To be honest, I know we haven't shared this poem with this group, but I wonder if this would be something we can link in the show notes or read aloud. But it's reminding me of the poem you shared at the beginning of our conversation today, Colleen, because I feel like that poem really outlined that we go through all of these things in life. And we need all of the paradox in order to even know what's up from down or left from right. And there are times where we keep going. But I'm saying that, and at the same time, I'm like, well, no, you know, you need to pause to know where you might need to go, or if you need to shift directions, or just go backwards, or don't go anywhere, just be. So I'm kind of maybe talking myself out of this now, but those were just some wonderings of that inner dialogue that we might have, like, well, do I need to pause now, or do I, maybe it's a different form of pause that you need.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, Kelly, but something that you were saying there reminded me of one of the threads from our earlier conversation about pause that sort of pointed to the possibility that pause can, and the necessity that pause can take a number of different shapes, that it doesn't always have to be simply a matter of stopping whatever it is that you're doing, but that it can sometimes be a matter of, well, keeping going, doing the work, but doing so having fundamentally reframed or shifted your mindset. So keep showing up, keep doing the work, keep responding to urgent need and so on, but the pause can take the shape of doing so in a way that isn't contributing to or reinforcing the loud, frantic, hopeless, despairing context that work is needing to respond to. Pause can take the shape of showing up with hope and groundedness and a sense of humor and some sort of expression of a different kind of energy than might be dominant in the urgency or the immediacy of the loud, frantic context. Is any of that making sense? If you, those of you who are listening could see our screen, you'd see the heads that I'm seeing nodding. So I'm sensing that there's agreement, at least among our little team here. But so anything more to say about any of that?
Thank you. That was a great wrap around what I was working through. So thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you. So we should wind down and allow folks who are listening to take a pause from listening to us for this episode. Anybody on screen with me have a beautiful way to close?
I was just thinking about the story you told at the beginning, Chris, where there was a gathering and folks were, a bell was rung and people were invited to pause. I had this practice during quarantine where I set an alarm on my phone daily. And I did try to, for a while it was the same time and that became predictable. So then I was switching the time to surprise myself. But I think as a practice for this episode, I'd like to invite folks to set an alarm in their home, their workspace, or on their phone, where they might hear the alarm and know it's an invitation to pause. And that could be ritualized, or it could just be done once, or could be done many times in a day. But I'm wondering about that as a possible practice.
Beautiful. Thank you for that, Kelsey. Kelly, since you mentioned a few minutes ago, referring back to the poem that Colleen started our evening with, Colleen, do you have it handy that you would feel comfortable reading the poem now?
Yeah, so I will read. This is a poem I heard in the last few days. I just really resonated with me, and I shared it with this group earlier tonight. I think it meets people in a lot of seasons of life. So anyways, it is called More Notes on Survival by Nikita Gill. Someone is talking to me about the light at the end of the tunnel, and all I can think of is after. What happens after we meet the light? After the grief ends, after we walk into happiness, won't there be another tunnel? Another painful passage? Another trauma simply waiting? And the answer is yes. Because in the Book of Being, life promised to be a moving thing. It promised to be both fight and flourish. It vowed to be both lesson and respite. So the love will end. The light will end. The joy will end. And as we keep walking, we find it again.
Thank you, Colleen and Kelly and Kelsey, for being together tonight, for being who you are in the world. And all of you listening, again, this is Chris Johnson, with gratitude to you also that you have been with us, that you are who you are in the world. And please know that all of us, Kelly, Kelsey, Colleen, and me, Chris, wish for you the kinds of things that were just voiced by Colleen sharing that poem by Nikita Gill. A rich, full life of, well, what it is going to be, of both fight and flourish, of lesson and respite. And that as you keep walking along the path that is your life, that you will come again to love and light and joy. We're grateful for you. Thanks.